Thank you very much for this very nice and kind introductions of yours. Again, like last time and last year, I'm most grateful to address all of you. I'm very well aware that my audience today is composed of people who have gone quite a journey in the, have made quite a journey in their lives, struggling with obstacles on their way, asking themselves questions like, should I continue to struggle? And then have been persistent in what they do. I know we have people from all over the world. We have people who have been struck by illness, by disappointment, people who have seen extraordinary fortunes and so on. And I wish to bring all of you now to a very serious discussion, a paradigm shift. When we hear a title like "When Life Doesn't Go Your Way, Lessons in Forced Surrender," I think most of us do know what Goethe spoke about. The German philosopher explained when blocks are put into your life, that's not a problem, because even from blocks you can build a wonderful house. Or that's what we say in Germany. In America, I think you say things with a example from Florida. When life throws lemons at you, you can make lemonade out of it. So that is known to most of us, that it can well be that the obstacles which come into our life, when you transform them and make opportunities out of them, that you can prosper. But today we want to go a level deeper into a paradigm shift that lets us look entirely different on our life, and therefore let us draw entirely different conclusions and then make entirely different actions. I will start by telling you a personal story. See, last time we spoke about our journey through India with the buses. The time in India came to its end, and we needed to bring the buses back to Germany to get a new carnet, that's a visa, so to say, or the equivalent of a visa, so that the buses could stay on in India and we could continue with our program. What was our program? Well, we went from village to village. We collected food from those who were a little affluent, grains, vegetables, cooked a big feast for the entire village, and then had an evening of kirtan, spiritual music. We showed a spiritual movie to the villagers. There was always the sensation. And in the end, we offered, or we cooked raw provisions into a nice feast. We offered it and we distributed it. So during this time, we avoided the Himalaya, the monsoon, by driving up the Himalayas, and but the monsoon caught up with us, and we had landslides then, and I had seen landslides before. I'm getting here mixed up. I'm telling now about this event where we were with buses in India, and we did this welfare, spiritual welfare program, so to say, in the villages. And we needed to bring the buses back. I remember we were poor at that time. We didn't know, we were mostly a little young in age, and we did not know about all these easy ways to induce people for fundraising. And on our way back, we had to pay the benzene by inviting hippies into the bus and driving them for a minimal fee of $95, I remember, from Kabul to Afghanistan, to Kabul to Istanbul. We told them many times, no one of you should bring any substances that look like substance abuse, because we will be checked for that, and we will have to we will all suffer from interrogation and so on. But the young people couldn't leave their hashish in India or in Kabul. And I remember once we were totally, we were stopped, and it was on the entry to Persia, and we were almost forbidden to continue our journey. Then I went out and said, these are people who live a different life, but I'm a monk. I do not take all these things, and we are in charge of the bus. I told them to avoid this, taking these things, but please don't be so stern to them. And please believe me, it's not a drug smuggling bus. We are just monks and we are poor. We needed to take passengers. And because I talked to them for 1 hour, they finally got tired of me, and they let the whole bus continue on. We finally arrived in Switzerland. My dear everyone, I had been in India. I had been in the East for what I considered a long time. To now come back to Switzerland felt like landing on a different planet. It was not easy. There was not much going on in terms of my ashram. Means there were no other monks in Switzerland, and we tried many things, knocked on many doors. I remember I went to the UN in Geneva. How do we say in English? Geneva, and requested them to look into this model of our greatest ashram in India and the Mayapur temple, and support us in building a temple where the whole world could come and see the necessity of, or see the beauty of, spiritual life. It was hard work. We, as I said, we knocked at the UN door, we knocked at farmers' doors, we said, we have a simple message, we are not the body, we are eternal souls. By taking up a genuine spiritual life, you can feel this. But it was new for the people. At that time, we lived at the house of a friend, and one afternoon, I went out into the surrounding hills to just think about everything and think about where could I be most useful, when all of a sudden I felt something was terrible wrong. Were there people following me? Not that I could see. Then I became extremely tired. I've never been so tired. I just made it to the root of one tree, I still remember, and put my body to rest and my head on the root of the tree. And I dreamt very, very disturbed dreams of wars and bleeding people. I woke up late at night when I looked at my wristwatch. It was 12 o'clock or coming to 12. I went on my feet and walked and fell immediately on the ground. Was I poisoned? I remember having been poisoned before. I barely made it to the door of these friendly parents who gave us rooms, and everyone was totally worried. Where were you? We didn't know where you are. Look at the time. It's night. But as they spoke to me, I fell. And I fell, fortunately, forward into the arms of my fellow monk, Chitrakara. When I woke up, I was in the hospital. I was diagnosed to have malaria. Now, malaria has different degrees, and there is one degree which is rare. A patient only reaches that degree when he has not taken any medicine. At that time, the medicine to take was quinine, highly chemical. And that was the only medicine that was known against it. Now they have much better medicine. But this was perhaps 30 years ago. I was, in terms of the degree of the illness, already just coming to the end, really. I don't have any recollections of the first few days in the hospital. Only one brief conversation with one sister, I remember, who said, "We've never seen this. You are sweating so intensely. We have to change 4 to 5 times your entire bed. It's all dripping wet. From where do you take all this water?" I said, "I don't know." And then I was already back in coma. It was serious. My parents were alarmed and came by helicopter from north of Germany to see the son perhaps for the last time. And during that time, there was a time when my friend, my fellow monk, he came regularly and he said, "Can you believe, Sachinandan Swami? One of the doors on which we knocked gave us a whole farm. We could plant vegetables. There is a beautiful lake there. There is a beautiful house that can be used for an ashram, and many people from the programs which we saw have inquired after you. They want to live in an ashram. After he went so far, I was already back in coma. The next day, we need you, we need you. You can lead this ashram. You speak German. You have translated the Gita from Bhagavad Gita from English to German. My dear everyone, all my dreams had come true. But I was not there to live out the dreams. I felt I will not leave this hospital bed alive again. I was so weak. And you know, when you have malaria, you have headaches that are so splitting. You just... And as I said, there was not so much research done at that time. Maybe there was research, but not so much good medicine. I was really stopped cold in my tracks, if that is an English way to express, when you are totally blocked and you can't move. I was physically unable to do anything. I was mentally not able to think anything very clearly. I was suffering, and I stood before the door, which you only pass one time. When you go over that one threshold, the threshold of death, there is no return. That's how it felt. Things didn't really go my way. Life didn't go my way. At that time, I arrived at what I consider perhaps the most precious gift in my life. But before that, I had to go through a night that was even more dark than the physical pain and the mental pain that everything is there now, what you have dreamt for a long time, and you could now realize an ashram, realize your dream of a self-sufficient ashram in Switzerland, near the banks of the lake, and it's all given to you for a nominal fee of 99 francs per year. That's nothing. You know, that was just to do it with the taxes or something. There was some reason. So there was one doctor, and he put me to an even more heavy test than the physical and the disappointment test. He came one day and said, "I have observed you. You seem to be a man of God. In your fever hallucinations, you speak of spiritual things. Sometimes I hear you praying. And I know you are here in Switzerland just to serve your Lord and to serve humanity by trying to lift the consciousness up. But don't you see, although you try to give everything for God, He does nothing for you. He is not there for you. He does not, if He's there, if there is at all a God, He does not care for you. He is silent." And then the doctor went on. He was a well-educated man. He said, "Where is your God when the children have bone cancers and die very young? Where is your God when there was war and the earth was filled with the blood of the soldiers who cried, 'Mama, Mama,' or 'God, God,' when Mama could not help? He is silent. either he is not there, and that was the opinion of the doctor, or if he is there, he doesn't care for what he has made. So now, please understand, I was physically challenged. I had the opportunity of my life. I couldn't do it, fulfill it. And now this doctor wants to break the most precious thing I still have left, my spirit, my conviction, my faith. During this time, I had to think deeply. I must say, I struggled with this question. Before I entered the ashram, I had this question already. It was an old question. I had to ask this question to my spiritual master. And I wanted to make my further steps dependent on his answer. Only if he could give a good answer was I ready to move forward and even consider to become a monk. My question at that time, it was in 71, to him was, if God is the creator, like you say, and if he is good, why is there evil? If he is the creator, it means he has created this world, everything in it. Then he must, and if he really is good, like you say, then he must have protected the people from wars and illness and evil and disappointment. But he didn't do that. So either he is not the creator or a powerless creator, or what is even worse, he is mean-spirited. I will come back to my spiritual master's answer in a little time. For now, I need to build up dramatic tension. So the doctor had challenged me. And I wanted to answer this question, his question or his challenge, not just from the mind, but from my experience. I first needed to be clear about this. The malaria went a little down, not very much down. Maybe my bed needed to be changed only 3 times or 2 times a day. I was not sweating so much, but I struggled now with an issue. Yes, most people come to spiritual life with the expectation that the situation in life becomes improved. They feel more happy. Maybe they are not richer or more beautiful, but at least satisfied and peaceful. But what if you come to spiritual life and your situation doesn't improve, but it worsens, it goes down? At that time, many, many people who consider the spiritual path give up on it. They are not willing to continue. In my case, a paradigm shift happened. My dear everyone, you must now focus a little. In spiritual life, there are 2 types of miracles. The first miracle is very much known. It's called the divine arrangement in your life. a patient who is ill suddenly gets very healthy, and the doctors say, we don't know how this happened. A poor man becomes an instant success. Or let us say someone is in a very bad accident, and suddenly his car, which is on a direct direction for destruction, you know, heading towards a tree or another car who comes from the front, it seems to be almost lifted and placed in a secure position. Or there might be miracles where someone has a divine vision of the Buddha, of Jesus, of Krishna coming to them. That's one type of miracle, that something that happens to you and to your situation. But the second miracle in spiritual life has nothing to do with improving your material situation. It is all about strengthening your spiritual life, your faith, your connection, your taste, your setting of priorities, and so on. I need to show this to you by making a drawing here. I'm not so prepared. Can I request for my notebook? Yes. Yeah, you are an angel with wings. Let me show you something. Here. In the beginning, when we start with our spiritual life, our understanding of Krishna is small, but our identification with the world is big. I know there are ways to do this on the computer, but I don't even know how to use a mobile telephone very good. So you have to see here. There's a small circle that is Krishna. Oh, it's at least on my screen. Can you see it on your screen, my writing, or not?
Yes.
Good. And your understanding, your perception, your evaluation of the world is very big. It occupies you. Your sleep, your health, your food, your relationships, your income, your problems, and so on. It is occupying you from morning till evening. And if you have a time where you go, oh Krishna, this very small time window. As you progress in spiritual life, something happens. Your understanding of Krishna becomes big. And your consideration of the world, that's the small circle, and your occupation with the world becomes very, very small. And at that time, you're ready to claim your most valuable treasure. The treasures of the soul are not money, are not physical beauty, is not even a palatial building in North America and the position of a governor of state in the dreamland California. At least we in Europe always think California is the land where of the, what is it, the oranges and of the I don't know what they, or I remember oranges, but maybe that's even wrong. Maybe that's Florida. Anyways, you know, the greatest treasure for the soul is not to improve its situation in the prison of the material life, in the prison of birth and death, where no matter what you try, the prison bars remain. We have a story of this in Germany. There was once a prisoner. He was a B-class prisoner. There's B-class. They have a very small cell. And then there is the A-class, where the mayor of the town comes. He has his television and his separate toilet, and then separate shower and so on. So the prisoner in the B-class prison thought, oh no, if I could only have a little luxury. So one day he had an idea. He asked the man, the prison guard, to give him an extra bar of soap, because he said, cleanliness is very important for me. And in the evening, he crafted something that looked like a pistol from the bar of soap. And when the prison ward came the next morning, he just took his soap pistol, prison guard didn't know, and threatened the man, please, you know, throw out that prisoner from prison cell A, you know, the A-class prisoner, and let me go into the A-class prison. Prison is prison. Improvements in the prisons do not really change so much. And when you are entering the path of spiritual life, you are getting a paper, so to say, where it says, this person takes on the path of the soul, the path to eternal spiritual life. So what I did when this was clear to me, I didn't think so much about malaria. I didn't think about missed opportunity in the farm. I thought, I have now the great opportunity. I will now turn, make a paradigm shift and go to that which is most important for me. I began to really take sincere shelter, knowing that there was the medicine was not really working so well. The doctors told me that they did not know. They had made many phone calls also to India, but they couldn't treat it faster and more efficient. But I said to them, I'm now going another path, not the path of using my spiritual life for material well-being, but going in the direction of my spiritual well-being. I remained sick, but I became a glowing patient, not glowing from the fever, but glowing from enthusiasm, from inspiration, and so on. And this has remained with me. Yes, I have also seen disappointment. Yes, I have also seen physical weaknesses. Yes, I have lost in the last 1.5 week 6 people to unexpected death. People who are close to me. Perhaps it happens also in your case. It seems the something has accelerated in speed. And so on. But I see death now differently. I see lengthening one's life not as the main subject. Lengthening the life is staying in prison. I see everything more as an opportunity for that is not what I want to say. I see that this world is covered with a veil of forgetfulness, and we are identifying with what is not our real identity, with our positions, with our male or female body, with the age, and age means how old we are, and so on. And we are totally misplaced in our values. So this experience there and then was a awakening experience that had a lot of power for me. I would now like to give all of us a little meditation. It will be similar to the one which we did, but you are now experienced meditators and you will most probably go deeper. And then let me look at the, then we have hopefully a little time before the full hour. But do you understand? You are talking to a person who has, who is no longer attached to the wrong concepts and is not suffering when things go wrong. My secretary will smile at me and said, "Well, you are very eager to settle your life." Yes, for service, so that I'm not, let us say, hampered in my most important activity. But really, I consider it a great freedom to get up every moment of the day, to leave my material attachments, the bars which hold me, because then I'm actually free from the prison bars of illusion. Should we meditate? No one is. Everyone has fallen down from their chair with this intense presentation. I don't hear you. Yes, they say. Or you say yes. Good. I need you to tell me if my machine is not too loud. Is this good. All right?
Good.
I request you all to invest a little bit in this spiritual journey of meditation. We will try to make contact with that real self within us, which stands when this body falls, which tells me to forgive when I am reacting out of anger. We are trying to come in contact with that self that gives me hope when everything is hopeless around me. And that self that tells me also when everything is full of the fulfillment of all my material desires, that's not what you really need. We're trying to get in contact with the true I. So kindly find a very comfortable position and not lying down. Well, if you want, you can actually also lie down. But you should remain alert and awake. Bring your awareness to the lower part of your body, starting with the feet. Move up to your knees, your thighs, your sitting bones, bones, and relax all that. Let it just soften the muscles. Perhaps try to feel the weight of these physical limbs. Move up your lower spine, then go to your upper spine, it means your back. Relax. Your belly, your chest. Relax. Both of your shoulders. Upper and lower arms and hands. Relax. The back of your neck, back of your head, and your entire face. Relax. Appreciate how fully relaxed you are. Safe and eager to continue with the meditation. Now breathe in and out. Do deep inhalation and then perhaps on a sigh. An exhalation. Again, a deep inhalation. And a long exhalation. Please relax, but remain very alert. Breathe now as it naturally comes. Think for a moment of the blood that circulates through your body. Do you know that within a short span of time, your blood cells are completely exchanged with new ones? The gut and the climate in the guts changing from day to day. The cells in your body are constantly exchanged. Old ones go, new ones are built. Remember images of you when you were a young baby. So innocent, so fresh, and see yourself now a little older. Thoughts have changed. Ideas, possessions, for some of us, friends, but deep inside, there's the one who remembers, that's me, when he looks at the baby body. Who remembers, yes, that's me, when I was on a hiking trip in Arizona. Yes, that's me when I gained and when I lost. This unchanging me is the true I, the true self. Think of it now as being a part of the Supreme Lord. This true I is all right the way it is. It doesn't have to become a better version of himself or herself. It is a part of the Supreme Person. It is full of knowing, full of happiness, and it does not die when the body dies. For a moment, try to remain in the space of the true I. Think of it as being in the hands or in the presence of the Supreme Being. Now take a few deep breaths. Come back to room awareness and computer awareness. You might like to rub your hands like this. It's good to put the nerve on a different modus. Take the hands from the eyes. My dear everyone, when the doctor came back after 2 days, well, he had come the next day also, but I was still not, the body was not well. But after 2 days, I had my answer and I said, I'm so happy, so blissful. I'm not afraid of anything because I found myself. Why should we sift the dust on the side of the road for a few coins which some traveler has lost there, when we have the precious, most precious jewel? And I said with so much peace and so much happiness that he said, "You remind me of my grandmother. When she was on her deathbed, she said, 'I'm the most happy person. I finally found myself.'" It's all right. Everything is all right. I learned my lessons. Yes. I will pause my reflections here. I hope it was inspiring for you to listen. Today, you could call the whole session "Finding the True I, Even When the Laundry Needed to Be Changed." Good. So I will see now. We have still a few more minutes before the full hour. I want to see if there is any question from the audience. And as our host has indicated, we do have half an hour after the full hour for questions and answers. But this is for those of you who have a full schedule. So let's go to your question.
As we have just a couple of minutes left, I had only one question that we must have answered before the hour is up, which is, what did your spiritual master say in response when you left us hanging in that place?
I hoped that someone would remember. Yes. He said, not Krishna has created this world, but you have created it. I thought, what? I can't even create a meal. What to speak of a whole world? I asked, I was young, and I was informed that Prabhupada had spoken about this. Just like the criminal with his criminal activity, where he creates such a mess around himself and in his life, is making the detention camp or the prison necessary, and creates by his activities the prison, I have had the wrong mindset, created a mess around myself and for everyone else, and for that I was placed in a learning experience here in this world so that I could learn my lessons and become inspired. So when he said, "Not God has created this mess, you have created it," I did not understand logically, I must say, but it somehow pierced through the layers of forgetfulness. It sparked my spiritual life and spiritual interest, you know, it began to, and I made the decision afterwards, okay, I'm going to become a monk for 1 year. Then I will see what if this works for me. And it worked. And I'm now, for more than 50 years, going on this path, and do not regret any moment, because it is, even my mistakes are lessons.
Thank you so much, Satchinandana Swami. We're so blessed to have you. Such a gift. And thank you for everyone who has joined us for this. We hope you've gained so much and that you take it with you. Please do stay with us now if you can. We will come to your questions if you can stay with us. So all the best. And if you're leaving now, we'll see you next week for part three in a new story of Satchinandana Swami. All the best. So we will transition here. Varsha, would you kindly ask your question?
Yeah, Hari Bol, thank you for that wonderful talk. My question was, you know, sometimes we have internal blocks which we're not even aware they exist. How do we build from those blocks?
Wonderful question, Varsha. It's so erudite. Everything starts, Varshana, by a simple little principle. You have to become aware of what it is and confront it in some ways. By putting the light of your awareness into the darkness of your inner space. That which was perhaps an unpleasant feeling or bad mood becomes visible as what it is, a particular block. Once you have done this, a big, big work has been achieved. What most of us do, we keep this in the subconsciousness like a crazy brother whom we don't want the world to see. And then all of a sudden, when we have a guest who really is important for us, whang, the crazy brother storms out of the cellar and ruins everything, including the reputation which we wanted to build up about ourselves. So you need to face these obstacles, and then once you have identified them, you need to know how to remove them. And there basically three things I want to recommend to you. One is, have association with spiritual-minded people and engage in discussion. Find out their story, how they overcame their obstacles. That will color your mind in a very favorable way. The second thing that helps you to overcome your inner obstacles or blockages is a spiritual lifestyle that brings light into the darkness. It starts really with acquiring some spiritual wisdom. But the spiritual wisdom, Varsha, will remain a theory only if you don't complement your knowledge with a spiritual practice that helps you to make an experience. I told you already about Sangha, the need for having spiritual association. And then do something that is not your original profession. You know, when I have guests, some of them are professors, some of them are martial artists, some of them are singers and so on. And I always tell them, please today, forget all of this. Join our cook, Prabhu Gaur Krishna, in the ashram kitchen and help cut vegetables. It will be very good for you to move out of your mind and into service, selfless service, where you're not serving your ego or what you think you are. And finally, what helps you to get over the inner blockages is something which I call the emotional traffic light. But Vasha, let's see. I think today someone will ask me a question where I have to tell the emotional traffic light. So stay with us. I have the good intuition it will come out today. If I talk now too long for you, that maybe, I don't know, then someone cannot ask the question. But thank you, Basha. Thank you. Don't keep something in the cellar. Discuss. And before you can perhaps discuss, you need to establish good relationships, loving, trusting relationships. That can be done in a therapeutic or counseling framework also, or it can be even outside a professional counseling session. That helps a lot because there's so much hidden there in the cellar, which we don't even see. We only feel something is not right. Yes, thank you. So stay with us. Emotional traffic light is very important for you. And we will just come to this. And I will, when I start talking about it, I will say, Basha, this is for you as well. Yes.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Basha. Jeremy, would you please ask your question?
Yes, thank you. So good to see you again, Sachinanda Swami. I wrote this one down because I wanted to get it all right. Last year, you were very kind in answering two of my questions, and the answers you gave me have actually stayed with me over the last 12 months, and I think about them weekly, if not daily. And the answers you gave me are captured in the form of phrases that I want to speak here into this space. The two phrases you gave me last year were, do you want to, and get on your bike and ride. And the questions to which those were the answers were around my intention of wanting to connect with God. You said, do you want to? And when I was questioning about trust in a spiritual practice, you said, get on your bike and ride. And so I think about those daily. So thank you for that. Just having the question in my mind, do I want to, opens up something surprising for me in that I don't actually need an answer sometimes. Just asking the question creates space that I didn't know existed. Whether I say no or yes doesn't matter. So my question today, I wanted to set that up, is around trust in a particular spiritual practice. When working with Razanath, he often talks about a crisis of belonging. A crisis of belonging is something that is a necessary tension on the path. And so I feel like I'm in a crisis of belonging. So I wanted to ask you, as I explore writings like the Bhagavad Gita in the evening and engage in a different spiritual practice in the morning, to continue the metaphor, can I ride different bikes at different times? Or do I need to choose just one? Does this metaphor hold up? Clearly, I can't ride two bikes at once, unless I'm in the circus, but maybe I ride one bike for this part of the path and another bike for that part of the path. And so I don't often read accounts of spiritually realized individuals approaching it this way, so I would value your thoughts on this matter. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Jeremy. What a pleasure to hear your well-formulated approach to spiritual life. When you have hit the water on the bottom of the well which you dig, you will find out that all the water everywhere is from the same source, the same underground spring. Jeremy, there are not really so many different spiritual paths. There are not so many different religious songs. There is really only one song, the song of the soul to God. But you only realize that one song when you, go beyond the notes and hear the music, you know, so go beyond the external form and feel the music, I would say. Let me give you an example. When I came to the path of Krishna consciousness, I can only say my own experience. I always was someone who was very open to spirituality. I had friends who did meditation form. I did like certain expressions of Christianity, which were not trying to get members, you know, I would say it like so preachy, I think you would say. I was very interested in many, many things. But then I decided I have to choose some practice, a practice, stay with it, and get to some real spiritual result. And that's what I want to express with my example. When I dig a well, if I dig a well for 3 meters deep, and then I say, well, I've not yet hit groundwater, then I go to another place and dig a well that is 2 meters deep, and again no groundwater, then I go to yet another place and dig a well that is 3 meters, 70 centimeters deep. I also have not hit well water. If I would have stayed in the first well, added 2 meters to it, then I would be already at 3 meters, 5 meters, and then I hope I'd have not forgotten the meter numbers. And then I add 3 meters 70, then it's 5, it's 8 meters 70, and then I hit the water. So, and then I will realize that wherever any well is, that is deep enough, it's the same taste, you know, the same water. Like, you will sometimes find me in the last row in my monk's dress in a Russian Orthodox church. There are such good churches like this in Macedonia. Ooh! And when they have their liturgy, when they sing their songs, and when their the rituals are going on, I feel just very, very, very Krishna conscious. You know, it's the same song, then the same feel of the music. You will find me as a guest in Sufi dargahs in Bosnia. I visited a few. And you will find me there. I don't want to shock anyone with my different monk's dress, so I sit politely at the back, close my eyes, and am there for the experience. You can also find me in the temple of nature and find God there, because it's about the taste. But in my understanding, you must first hit the groundwater. Otherwise, you don't know the taste. So I suggest that you follow the signs. The fact that you are together with these upbuilt people already for 1 year, it means there is some resonance in you to the type of spirituality which they live. And I think if you are a little bit serious in, you know, getting your sleeves up, and hit the groundwater. I think that will be very good for you. That's my answer.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Jeremy. Kim, would you please ask your question?
Yeah, thank you. I first want to express my gratitude for the story because it's really an old memory I have, and from a very long time ago of being a child and listening to stories and just loving to be seated at the foot of somebody who's telling a story out loud. It's just a very, very good memory that I have, and it's very old, and it doesn't come up very much. So thank you so much for that. And then I wanted to say that as I was transported by the story, which was, the drama was great, there was a moment when you were talking about the doctor who was, you know, standing at what was potentially your deathbed. And I mean, even now I get chills and I feel angry about it, like questioning your spirituality and trying to take that from you when you were possibly dying. And it makes me so, I feel furious when I think about that because it feels cruel. But what I recognize is that hijacks me out of the story. You're not feeling angry and resentful of that person. And but my point is that I'm hijacked out of it. And I came back, but I was wondering if you have any advice as to how one can manage those kinds of emotions, which, even though they're righteous and they can drive social justice and fighting the good fight, it doesn't, at this point in my life, it doesn't feel like positive spiritual energy. It's not an energy that I think is in the right direction.
Kim, it is very kind of you that you feel like this towards that mean doctor. Was he really mean or was he really desperate? Doctors know that they shouldn't do that to patients. He did it anyway. Why? Perhaps he struggled with that question and couldn't get hold of an answer. I have learned to always try to see behind what drives people. And that has helped me to become free from that energy of judgment that is not feeling right when we are on the spiritual path. To become free from judgment, the first thing I suggest is to understand everyone, everywhere, is just trying their best in their lives. They are suffering like you. They are hoping like you. They have goals like you. But according to their particular ability, this manifests in different ways. It's almost like birds. They all fly, but one can fly 50 meters high. If he is a peacock, I think he can fly 30 meters high. Then there are others who go 50 meters, and then there is the eagle who can go, I'm not an eagle expert, but I think they can go like 3 kilometers or so high. Everyone can only go where their evolution allows them to go. And they try to fly, but they can't go on a higher level than they are allowed to go by their spiritual evolution. So I have seen when people attack me with these faith questions, Often they think, I mean, let me make my case as hard as possible. Let me see if he can convince me, if he can break my hard case, if I somehow in some corner of my complex personality desire, then I will see something that I have overlooked so far. I have often seen those who are the hardest are easier to convince than those who go along. Yes, I am okay with this. I am okay with spiritual life. Yeah, I'm okay with meditation. Yeah, I believe in some God, in God and so on. But who never ever get out of the mediocrity of just coasting along without putting some intensity to their spiritual life. You often have see that the greatest saints were the greatest sinners. You often see that those who are most convinced are those who were very, very much against it. It's much easier for me as a Swami to talk to someone who shoots arguments on me than to try to convince someone who's okay with everything to move forward. So, but we talk about judgment. You are absolutely right. Only if you absolutely have to do this, when you have to see where someone at, can I entrust him with taking care of this little child or not? Only when you are in situations where you need to assess a person to avoid harm and to further the good, then some type of judgment, which we could call assessment, is good. But if you go through the world, or I don't like him, or he is so like this, it is. I had this happening in the AI conference. There was someone just walking very slowly, and I thought, well, he is handicapped. What is he doing on a conference? But then I heard him talk, and his thought was so precise and so optimistic, so good, that I thought, oh, again, I have misjudged someone and placed a judgment based on externality. Now, even if someone is what you think they are, it's not up to us to judge. It's not our duty, unless we have to take care. But thank you that you were, I felt also something very good in you. You were like a lioness. Leave the monk alone. That is good. That type of, we need lionesses like you, Kim.
Thank you so much, Kim. Brahmatirtha Prabhu, you are...
Oh.
you must ask your question, please.
Jai Maharaj. Thank you, so nice to see you. I really liked your story of the malaria. One of the lessons you gave was any suffering we have, there's some benefit to it. There's something we get out of it. And we can learn the lesson or not learn it. My question to you is, I see a lot of suffering in the animal world. What do they get out of it?
Wonderful. I cannot refrain from saying I'm so happy to see you. Somehow you have conquered my heart in a good way. good. So now coming to your question. This world has two big utilizations. One is to make experiences and learn through experiences. The second is to obtain liberation from the constraining straitjacket of material life and material thinking. So take these things, experiences and moksha or liberation, and put this as the major matrix over this world. You have humans who make experiences, and you have animals who make experiences. Everyone makes experiences. The humans are in the good situation that they are able to learn from the experiences a lesson that this world is not my original home. Animals can't come to this conclusion, but by their experiences, they can come to the conclusion that they can learn indirectly. Now this gets now very abstract philosophy, but into abstract philosophy, but because you are a philosopher and a director of a scientific institute, I dare to go there. When the animals make their experiences, when the dog is kicked by his master and brought out of the car and bound at a tree, and then the master drives away and leaves the dog without food and drink and security, the dog will learn a hard lesson that perhaps in another lifetime he was not kind, and he was attacking those who were, how do you say, who were his subordinates, who were or who were his dependent on him. No, and by getting rid of that abuse and karma which he made in the human form of life, by going through the suffering like a dog, like that dog, which then his path gets clear. He has paid his karmic debts, so to say, his path, and he is going forward in the Paternoster. In the Paternoster is something we have in Europe. It's you get in there's a big office building, and then there are these little cabins which go up. There's no door. You go, chuck, you go in the first story, and then you go with your baggage up to the fifth, and you get out, jup, and see the person on the fifth story. So in the same way, there is a paternoster, an automatic lift that lifts all the souls in this classroom of God to the next level. And sometimes they need to learn through the hard lessons to be able to be allowed in the next level. That's my answer. But having said this, let us never ever close our heart to the sufferings of others, even if they are dogs, and so on and so forth. We have a little charity in India which takes care of stray dogs and stray cows when they are wounded. There is from dog bites, there is a certain medicine which is put on the wounds so that they heal. A spiritual person should try to help everyone and then pray for them so that it goes faster. Thank you.
Thank you, Brahmatirtha Prabhu.
Thank you very much.
So we'll come to our close here. Thank you all for staying with us for that extra half an hour with Satchinandana Swami. We can't wait to have you back next week for part 3. and profuse gratitude, Satchinandana Swami, for sharing so spiritually in such a powerful way. It means so much. Thank you.
Allow me just
the best to everyone.
Allow me just one millisecond.
Please.
I wanted to speak about a paradigm shift, that when things don't go your way, try to leave the changing world, the up and down world, and try to find your spiritual essence, like we did. And from that place, try to blossom forth. That was what I wanted to explain. Thank you very much.
Wonderful. And the emotional traffic light will come back. We had a glimpse last week. It will come back. Thank you, Patsy.
Oh, sorry. Forgive me. Time.
No, not at all. Take good care.